warning. The Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not so fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here in studio. It is not a studio, it is not a study, it is the studio with my co-host, best friend, partner in crime, David Niles.
Yo!
Dave, this is a episode long time coming.
I know, it is.
I'm really excited.
And we decided earlier that this is our best episode.
Yeah, earlier today, Dave and I were like, okay, we got to make sure we kind of like call each other before the episode and we kind of hype each other up about the episode. And so we decided today, dude, this is just going to be the best episode we've had so far.
And so we just we decided.
That's what we decided. And so here we go. Buckle up.
Yeah.
Today we have a friend of a friend, now a bloke. Is that right? Mr. Matthew Frad?
Yeah, bloke would be synonymous with guy.
Okay. I didn't know that for sure. But Matt Frad, he is an author, a podcaster, a speaker, a blogger. What else are you, Matt? I'm sure you're a dad, a husband.
Yeah, father of four, husband, son of God.
Fellow sinner.
Yeah.
So, Matt, if this is your first time listening to the Catholic Man Show, we do three things. Dave, let them know what we do.
Okay, so the three things we do every time and we're going to do again today are: one, open, review, and enjoy a manly beverage. And we have a manly one today. Number two, we highlight a man gear of some kind. This is something that if you're a man, you should have. And if you don't, you probably wish you had it. And why it's manly, we talk about it. Number three, we have what some have called the most manly discussion of all time.
Yes. Matt, I don't know if you're aware of this. You know, I know you have pints with Aquinas, but...
By the way, congratulations. I don't know if you know this. Your show won an award, second place, for the second most manly podcast of the week.
Is that true?
Yeah. We won first place.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
This isn't a contest that you ran, is it?
Well, we do give out the award.
We're the only chairman.
I'm honored to be the runner-up.
But yeah, you destroyed all the... It's like... You were a close second. Third place was like way in the distance.
Good. Yeah. Thank you.
So actually, Matt Frad has actually it was Pints with Aquinas and Integrity Restored.
That's true.
2A and 2B.
Right, but
because you like you like do two podcasts. I don't know how you have time to do everything that you do.
I don't either. Yeah.
Okay, so let's get into the man beverage real quick. It is brought to you by Dr. Michael Malloy. He hooked us up with the man beverage
today.
Good friend
of ours here in Tulsa.
Yes, and it's one that we've been having on our list and just haven't got to yet.
Yeah, Open is... Did you say what it is?
No, go ahead.
It's Open 14. This is a fantastic scotch. I don't know why we haven't had it on yet. I think probably because it's slightly more expensive than the typical Laphroaig that we drink.
Yes.
Or that we like to drink. So, but it's fantastic.
So let's cheers.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers to Jesus. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Raise your glass.
Mm. I have to ask, Matt, what do you have in your Glencairn glass?
Well, before I tell you that, I got to tell you about the first time I ever drank what you're drinking, Oban 14. I was living in San Diego, and I decided to splurge on a bottle of scotch. It was Lagavulin 16.
Mm.
And I don't ever remember tasting something as beautiful as that. I mean, it's kind of like drinking a campfire, you know, it's just peaty and gorgeous. And so going from that to the Oban 14, it was difficult for me to appreciate because the Lagavulin is just so intense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't actually really like it. But having come back to it after not just having my taste buds destroyed by campfire scotch, I realized it was actually really awesome. But today I'm a lot less sophisticated than y'all. I'm drinking Bullet Bourbon, but I do happen to be drinking it in a The Catholic Man Show. What is this called, this glass?
The Glencairn glass.
Okay. And which y'all were kind enough to send to me. And it's I'm a bourbon drinker. I love the idea of drinking bourbon. It just feels really American and really Southern, you know?
Totally.
Absolutely. And Bullet is really good with Old Fashioned.
Okay.
If you make an Old Fashioned with Bullet, it's really good.
But cool. Matt, the same thing happened to me when I started drinking Laphroaig. Then I went back to some of these Highland scotches that I've always liked and that are good. But it's kind of like I had been ruined by drinking this, just the intensity of the Laphroaig.
That's right.
And the Lagavulin, like you said, those are just so good.
Yeah.
And Laphroaig is cheaper than...
And it's just as, well, I wouldn't say it's just as good, but I'm going to go ahead and just out myself as I'm in no way a Scotch connoisseur by any means. But I'm very happy with Laphroaig. It's absolutely beautiful. Yeah.
And I didn't mean, Laphroaig is cheaper than Lagavulin, but really what I was meaning was that it's cheaper than most other scotches. So
That's true.
To become a Scotch connoisseur is a expensive game to get into.
Yeah.
The Catholic Man Show will have to become even more popular.
Yeah. So you should join our Council of Man.
Yeah. That's a great segue.
If you like what we do and you want to say, hey, these guys need to drink more expensive Scotch, you should go to thecatholicmanshow.com and sign up, donate $10 a month, and you can support our show and the mission of manhood.
Hey, not that you asked me to, but I want to just totally emphasize what you just said there. I feel like as Catholics, we always complain, why isn't there good media out there that can nourish me? I'm not being fed, blah, blah, blah. Well, you guys are doing an awesome job being fed. And so, I encourage the people listening and myself to go ahead and donate to you guys. Thanks for the great work you're doing.
Yeah.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I appreciate it. That was awesome.
Didn't think I'd encourage myself to donate to you during this podcast. I just did it.
Matt, you're a good guy.
That's
going to
be
a
sweet soundbite that I'm going to cut and like play on our social media.
Oh, no kidding. But this open...
So the open is really good. It's a, like you said, it's Highland Scotch.
But it's not the... Uh-huh. A lot of Highlands, to me, like kind of what I was saying, have become boring. Uh-huh. This one is not as boring. Do they make is the Open 14, do you know, is this their standard? Do you guys know?
I don't.
Yeah, I think it's their entry level.
I didn't know if they had a 10 or...
I think 14 is kind of their go-to.
That's where they start. Yeah.
18 I've had as well, and it's really good. But I got to tell you, for the price difference, I would go with this 14.
And you know, along the same vein, I think it's kind of for the same reason, I've kind of noticed myself liking younger scotches more so than like a 20-year scotch. So smooth, drinks so nice, but it kind of loses some of the aggression.
Yeah.
That I've come to enjoy.
Dave, real quick, before we hit this first break, we probably need to like say why we're drinking on air.
Oh,
because we haven't done that in a couple episodes. And for the first, people who are listening for the first time are like, what the heck are these guys doing?
Yeah, because God invented beer and whiskey.
And it's good.
It said, you know, you thought on the seventh day he was resting, but that's just because his brew wasn't ready yet. Yet, so that's why we drink. No, but really, God made the things of this earth good, and they should be enjoyed for their goodness. And that's what we want to do. We want to appreciate God's creation in all of its fullness. But at the same time, we realized that it's one thing to talk about moderation, and then it's another thing to do it and express it and say, hey, you can do this in moderation. Here's what it looks like. Please observe. And we both just really like it. So that's why we drink on air.
Well,
but moderation means something different for everybody. So there's some guys out there who moderation, when it comes to alcohol, means none. Mm-hmm. And it's a manly thing to know that about yourself. And we all applaud those men because they are really public testimonies to a virtue that is just trampled on these days.
That's the truth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, self-mastery is something that we all, as men, should be striving for.
Yeah.
And something that we're actually probably going to be talking about, at least touching on today with our topic.
Yeah.
But, you know, the reason why this show started is, Dave, because you and I had great conversations out in the back porch smoking a pipe with a
drink of some kind.
And we said, you know what? We should just start recording these. And that's basically how this show started.
We happened to run a radio station and had the means to do so. So, here we are.
Here we are. And Matt, you're an avid pipe smoker, so you can probably relate to that. That, you know, there's a certain time where you get together with the other guys and have a nice drink and smoke, and you know, right. just want to record that convo.
Yeah, there's. I'll get a quote. I was just reading to my kids right before I got on air that short story by H.G. Wells, The Time Traveler. Uh-huh. And I got to read this little quotation from that because it goes to what you're saying. Something about anyway. Here it is. He says that luxurious after dinner atmosphere when thought roams gracefully, free of the trammels of precision. And it seems to me that there is something about a nice pipe and a bit of whiskey that also kind of contributes to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you know, we're really trying to cultivate just authentic masculinity, you know, authentic brotherhood, you know, because that's something that you don't see a lot, especially in today's culture.
Yeah,
and something that guys are starving for. I mean, it's very clear that guys are starving to have other guys around them that, you know, think like they do.
Absolutely.
And have the same values and virtues that they're striving for.
And put in an environment where it says, this is a manly environment. No, none of this, manly, womanly, and, you know, stuff is all the same. You know, it's like we can say, no, we're here as men, and we're doing man stuff, and it feels good.
That's right. So hang in there through the break with us. I'm Adam Minahan. Sitting here with David Niles, we have Matt Pratt, author of The Porn Myth, and many others. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Studio with Adam Minahan, joined via Skype, the one and only Matt Frad. Thanks for being here, Matt.
Good to be here. Yeah, thanks, guys. Great to be here.
I gotta tell you, Matt, like, I thank you so much for joining us, because it's been, like I said at the very beginning of the show, it's been a long time coming. You've been very patient with us, because the first time that we were supposed to have you on, our equipment, for whatever reason, was not working.
Yeah.
And so we had to reschedule, and it was just kind of chaotic. So thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Well, no, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I'm honored.
So now we come to the man gear. We come to the moment where we highlight a man gear. And today, let me tell you, gentlemen, we have a manly gear for you. If you ever have that urge to smash things, to destroy or to build, then this man gear is for you. It is the hammer. And it's probably one of the oldest man gear that exist. I have done in-depth study on the hammer.
You have?
For at least 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. There we go.
But I went in-depth for 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I found exactly what I expected to find. The first hammer dates to approximately 30,000 BC, and it is simply a rock. And that's what I knew. I knew I was going to say that the first hammer was just a big rock. But then it does get better. 27,000 years later, the first improvement to the hammer occurred during the Bronze Age, where they finally made it out of bronze and put a handle on it. They tied a wooden stick onto it.
Took them a while.
And basically it just gets, then it was a very rapid development on the hammer. It wasn't long until they started actually forming molds into what look like exactly the hammers we have today. Then there was no development on the hammer. So we're once again in a very stagnant hammer phase. Like, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That reminds me of that scene from Seinfeld where George and Jerry have this debate about how there's been no improvement on toilet paper. And they're like, what are you talking about? There's peach, there's double ply.
Oh, that is funny.
You know, actually, Matt, since you brought it up, I have a rule. I have a rule when it comes to buying toilet paper.
Okay.
And I've had this rule for, since I was in college. Even when I was poor in college, I still did this. I would go and I would simply find the most expensive toilet paper that there was. And okay. That's the toilet paper that I went home with. And it, if you do that, I don't even remember what it is I bought because I wasn't looking at the brand. I was just looking at the price. All I know is that I would come home and I'd be like, this is phenomenal toilet paper. People would
I might be eating like a pauper, but I am pooping like a king.
Exactly. People would come out of my bathroom and they would make comments, be like, that's some sweet toilet paper you have in there. Like, thank you. You know what? You're worth it.
I don't skimp on toilet paper.
Yeah. And you shouldn't either, because you're worth it.
Okay, so there's...
God made you a king, and you should at least feel like it at some point throughout your day. Right. Why not that moment? I'm just saying.
Why not?
The only thing that I have to contribute with the man gear today...
Loop it back to the man gear.
Okay,
good idea.
The only thing that I have to contribute is that I sell hammers.
Oh, do you? I didn't think about that.
I'm a sales guy by trade, and so I sell castings and forgings.
Yeah.
And so I sell forgings that... are hammers that are made for firefighters.
Oh, no kidding.
So, you know, the difference between a forging and a casting, a forging is a hammer that's coming down, you know, folding into the metal into a shape.
Okay.
And a casting is molted metal that's poured into a mold.
Which one's stronger?
A forging.
Okay.
So anyway, if you get
I forged golf clubs.
Yeah, so those are super nice.
Yeah.
So forgings are a higher grade or more durable than castings.
Okay. You know, I will say about the hammer, because I used to be under the impression that, look, a hammer is, get a cheap hammer. It's just a metal thing that you bash nails into the wood with. Like, why are you paying more for a hammer? But then, actually, I did buy an expensive hammer, and it is sweet. There, I realized that it's not just about being
weight
heavy.
Distribution.
Yeah, it's about the balance.
Yeah.
And it also, this one is all one solid piece of metal. Mm-hmm. So the head is never going to fly off. You know, you get a hammer that you use for a while and the head starts to get a little shaky. And there's always that thought in the back of your mind that, what if the head just goes flying into the distance?
Could be bad.
You know, and it's like, my children are over there, but I'm still hammering.
Matt,
you got to be careful.
Yeah, you do have to be careful. Matt, what do you think? You are a Thomist. If you had to, aspiring Thomist.
Sure.
Okay, so is there anything that you can, can we connect some dots? Is there anything that you think that St. Thomas Aquinas would say about a hammer? What do you think?
Well, you know, I have a couple of things to say, I suppose. You know, when people read Augustine and they read Aquinas, they notice a noticeable distinction. And perhaps we could say, and I think I'm stealing this from Joseph Pieper, who said something to the effect of, Augustine is beautiful like a garden is beautiful, whereas Aquinas is beautiful like a tool is beautiful. Right. And there is a sense in which if there was a very well crafted hammer, you might say this is a beautiful hammer. But you mean that in a very different sense to this garden is beautiful. So in other words, whereas Augustine really does speak to the heart with poetic language, Aquinas is much more interested in precision. Mm. And that's why there are no successful St. Thomas Aquinas quotation Twitter accounts, because the dude is not is not interesting in sound bites. He's not trying to play with words. He's trying to be as specific as possible. So that's what I have to say on that, I guess.
That's actually really, you know, okay, that actually reminded me of Dave. I think we've talked about this before, maybe not on the show, but when we were hearing a priest here in the diocese talk about, you know, the Bible verse that says, be perfect as your heavenly
father. I was about to say this.
Okay.
You're doing it. I'm glad. Just keep going.
Well, be perfect as your heavenly father is perfect. You know, and that could be an overwhelming verse. Like, what do you mean be perfect? You know, how am I going to be perfect?
Yeah, why don't you just quit sinning?
Yeah,
you
quit sinning.
Sinner.
Yeah, just
you
stop
sinner.
Just stop sinning. How are you going to do that? But the priest said...
I'm waiting to quit once you quit. Once you quit sinning, I'll quit sinning.
Okay.
You're holding me back.
I'm holding back. Okay. But the priest said it's more about being perfect. Like, a hammer, when used properly, that's when it's perfect. It's being used exactly what it's made for. So by the act of the hammer hitting the nail and being used or hitting whatever it is, by the act of that happening and it being used exactly what it's made for, then it's considered a perfect hammer.
Right, yeah. So the word in Greek, when it says be perfect, is teleo, which is where we get the teleological. So like the purpose of something. So yeah, a perfect hammer would have been a hammer that was being used for hammering. You know, not being used to try to eat with or, you know, something that you didn't make a hammer for. So be perfect as your heavenly Father is perfect means be who God made you to be, and then you will be perfect. You know, because that is your purpose. That's why you're here. So know him,
super,
love him.
Super impressed that you just pulled Greek out without looking anything up. Well done.
Well, I know I've got like four words, and that happens to be one of them.
So yeah, so I mean, at, you know, you're perfect whenever you know you're a husband and you're keeping, you know, you're focused on your wife and making sure that your marriage is safe. You're perfect whenever if you're a father, making sure that you're spending time with your kids and teaching your kids
and protecting your family.
Yeah, exactly. That's when you're quote unquote perfect. Yes?
Yeah. So after this homily where this priest was doing this, I went up to him and I was like, Father, during the consecration, you just looked perfect. And he didn't laugh. So I don't know if he got it. He just kind of said, thanks.
Yeah.
And I was like, that was, okay, that was a joke. But like, I thought it's you looked clearly great. You looked great all the same. Yeah.
Sometimes you got to keep swinging.
You can't win all of them.
You can't win all of them. So anyway, I think that's probably... all I have to say about the hammer.
Well, I think those are some good thoughts on the hammer.
Yeah, you guys thought that we couldn't come up with something good on a hammer?
I was impressed that there was really only one change. Okay, two changes to the hammer.
Mm-hmm.
First, they put a stick on, they tied a stick onto a rock.
Right.
And they said, oh, there's leverage here. And then they said, we can make this out of metal.
Yeah. See, but again, to respond in a Seinfeldian way, I'm not sure if that's a word, but what are you talking about? There's all sorts of different colored handles. You've got the little fork things on the back, which I don't know what they're called because I'm not as manly as you two. You got different sizes. There's been tons of changes.
And that's a good point. One improvement they've made, bottle opener on the back.
There you go.
I have seen that.
I have a hammer with a bottle opener on the back.
I have seen that.
Now, it's terrible for pulling a nail out of the wood if that's what you need to do, but who cares? You can open a bottle of beer. Yeah.
Okay, so we're about to go to break. Real quick before we do, I want to just talk about the Catholic Man Show camp out that's coming up October 19th through the 22nd. We're going to be at Clear Creek Monastery. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's only there's less than 10 spots left.
So sign up.
If you
sign
go
up
to
now.
thecatholicmanshow.com, you can go sign up there. We're hoping that Mike Miley will be there from the Rival Sons.
We're going to roast a whole pig.
Yeah. Yeah, we are going to roast a
whole
pig.
We're going to cook a pig.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Sam Guzman's going to be there as long as his wife isn't giving birth at that time. It's going to be right during that period of time. So he's contingent.
Right.
But it's going to be a lot of fun. There's guys coming from all over the U.S., Oregon, California, Massachusetts, Arizona, Texas. They're flying. Everybody's flying in. It's going to be a blast. So go to thecatholicmanshow.com. Sign up. There's only, like I said, less than 10 spots left. Bring your dad. My dad's coming. Dave's dad's coming. There's a couple dads coming. Be a lot of fun. When we get back, we're going to talk about the porn myth with Matt and Brad. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles. Dave, we are on the Lord's team.
Indeed, we are on the winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Thanks for sticking to the break. Not that you probably stuck through the break. Not like they were just sitting there waiting. They probably went and did something else or fast-forwarded if they're on the podcast.
Yeah.
But thanks for coming back. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles. And we have Matt Frad, author of The Porn Myth, along with many others. But this is the one we're going to talk about today, The Porn Myth. I got to give it up to you, Matt Frad, for coming up with a book that is incredibly awkward to read in a coffee shop. I was reading this book in a coffee shop
And
I went and in fact, it's a very easy, like it's a great read. It's short chapters. It's, you can fly through it. I highly encourage going and picking it up. But I ordered my coffee. I went down and sat down and I was reading through the book. They called me up there. I went to go grab it and I had the book in my hand. And this lady that was handing me the coffee gave me this absolutely disgusted look on her face.
No.
And said, "What are you reading?" You know, because all you could see was really kind of the porn. That's all you couldn't really see the porn name.
Yeah.
And so I showed it to her, talked to her about it. She finally was okay with it. But anyway, it was a little bit of awkward.
We don't want.
I joke with my friend Daniel Mattson that the two of us have a competition, which is more awkward. I still think that his is. So why I don't call myself gay? Gay being a very large word on the front cover of the book.
I remember when I was reading the book "Making Gay Okay" by Robert Riley. I was like on an airplane, and I actually took the cover off so that I could read the book without the people like.
Oh man, I was flying somewhere. I do a lot of kind of research and reading on planes, and was doing this cross country trip, and I was reading Sexaholics Anonymous, which is usually referred to colloquially as the white book. Okay, so I thought, well, no problem there. It doesn't have any words on the front or back cover. It's just pure white. Well, I went back to the bathroom, and as I came back, I guess I'd been reading it so much that the front cover had curled up, and so the person in the middle seat could very easily look down and see Sexaholics Anonymous. But it's not something you can check with them. You know, did you see this? Because I'm not necessarily a sexaholic, I don't think.
Right.
This is research.
I'm doing research.
Yeah. I promise. I talk to young people about this. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to move seats,
yeah,
please.
Can I move? I need to move seats. I know that there's a lot of dads who listen to the show with their sons, and I don't think that this is a topic that you shouldn't probably have with your sons, but just word of caution, we are going to be talking about porn today.
Wait, did you say this is something...
That you should be talking with your son.
I couldn't tell what you meant. So you're saying this is a good conversation to have with your son. Yeah.
Maybe not.
It might be a conversation you want to have with him and not Adam,
right.
David, and Matt.
Yeah, it should be on your terms, the way you want it to be had. Yeah.
Exactly. So, Matt, in your book, there's a lot of... I like how the last 90 pages are all like your stat appendixes and research. So that way... Because I get in conversations with guys and gals of different things, atheists, you know, trying to make a moral argument, and they're like, "Well, where's your stats? Where's your research?" And you know, you read a book, and you're like, "Well, this book, where'd they get those stats?" I don't know. So, both you and Trent Horn do a really good job of making sure that that your work is cited. And I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you. It was really important to me. This book, The Porn Myth, as you know, is a non-religious book. So I don't appeal to religious dogma or scripture. I don't even make a religious argument. I don't talk about Jesus or any of that in this, not because I don't think that's highly important, but because in a secular culture, you know, we recognize we need to have... You know, scientific arguments, logical arguments against abortion. I think the same thing's true of pornography. And so tried to be as thorough as possible.
Absolutely. So go pick up the book, The Porn Myth. It's by Matt Frad, by Ignatius Press. All of Matt's royalties go to the San Diego Children of the Immaculate Heart to help with women. What was the exact terminology?
Yeah, no, that's fun. Yeah, it's Children of the Immaculate Heart, an apostolate in San Diego that helps sexually trafficked women.
Sexually trafficked women, yes.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Anyway, okay, so I have a couple questions that I want to ask. I'll go first, and then I'll let Dave, because I'm sure he does as well.
I've got some.
Yeah, my first question is, there are plenty of men out there with families that are struggling with pornography. Okay. Mm-hmm. It's a constant battle. You have your cell phone, you have your TiVo, your smart TVs, there's screens all around you. At what point, if you're struggling with pornography, do you eliminate that stuff to the point where it is a burdensome to your family? Meaning, like, okay, we're not going to have the internet anymore because dad struggles with pornography, so whenever the kids have to go to do homework, they have to go to the library, which is a burden for everybody. You know,
yeah.
I like... Where do you draw that? Is there a line to draw there?
That's a great question. That's a great question, and it's one I've done like a million interviews on this book, and I love how insightful and yeah, it's a great question. You know, first of all, I think we ought to say that if a man is going to those sorts of lengths, in one sense, he ought to be congratulated because, you know, there's a million men to every one man like this who's making excuses for himself, saying that this is his wife's fault, telling himself that this is natural, that everyone else has the problem, that Matt Frad's a, you know, uptight, prudish freak, and that he's just fine. So I think they ought to be congratulated for their enthusiasm and wishing to combat this. And but you know, there are certain things we can do that not a lot of people think about that can really help us. So, for example, I have an iPhone. Now, struggling with looking at pornography, the temptation to look at pornography, isn't necessarily my sin right now. Maybe it will be tomorrow, but as you know, lately it isn't. But I do tend to have my attention fragmented by social media, email, Google Chrome on this thing. So what I've done is I went into settings and I had my wife set the restrictions. And what she did is she blocked the downloading of apps, and then you can put in a passcode for those restrictions. I then go into my iPhone and I delete all of the time-wasting apps. So right now on my phone, I can't look at the internet if I wanted to. I can't go to Twitter. I can't go to Instagram. I can't go to Facebook. If you ever see me posting on Instagram, it's because I'm like, hey, honey, can I borrow your phone? I need to post something, you know? So essentially, I've turned my smartphone into a dumb phone, right? And I actually don't know the code. I asked my wife, please set it for me. I have no self-control, clearly. You know, I need to go nuclear here. And so, you know, there's no reason we can't at least begin with those sorts of alternatives. And I found it really helpful just, you know, when I'm driving, I don't check at the traffic light. I have more kind of thinking room. And maybe there's men who are listening, and for them, you know, maybe they've got covenant eyes on their computers, but they might think, well, this is my one place that I do check porn a lot. I look at this at, when I'm sitting on the toilet, maybe I'll pull out my phone if I'm tempted. Well, you can no longer do that now. So that, yeah, that might be an intermediate step. Doesn't, you know, fully answer your question, but it's the beginning of an answer, I think.
Yeah.
So kind of following that same vein, I've often wondered, and you are the person to ask, how much effect does just the noise that assaults all of our senses, how much do you think that affects our sexual appetite, you know, when we're just so used to being overstimulated all the time? I mean, it just seems to follow that we would come to desire that from our sexual appetite as well. And remove, kind of like doing what you're doing here, checking out from some of the noise could be a preventative measure, if not part of a solution for somebody.
A restorative one. Yeah.
So what do you think that plays?
Yeah, look, I'll give it a shot. One of my favorite philosophers is 17th century philosopher Frenchman Blaise Pascal. Inventor of the first calculator, actually. But in his work, The Pensées, which is just a bunch of his writings that were collated together after his death, he says this wonderful thing. He says, all of the problems in the world all come down to this fact, that men do not know how to sit in a dark room silently. And I think there's tremendous wisdom in there, and it's why I prefer going to a Catholic bookstore than adoration. Because in adoration, there's nothing to buy. There's nothing to distract me. It's just me. And I don't really like me. And because I don't really like me, I try to escape me. And having a phone in my pocket is a perfect means and an efficient means of doing just that. But of course, as you say, the problem is if I fill my life with distractions, then I'm going to be suffocating my interior life, which I know is a fancy Catholic term, but it just means that inner conversation that goes on within oneself when there's not much else happening, you know, that's supposed to lead to that conversation with God. But I do think if we become constantly just distracted, fragmented, firstly, perhaps it's the case that we won't have the sort of reserves necessary to hold off temptation because we're not pure in heart. That is, we don't have a heart that is intentional about serving the Lord. That might be one reason. The other reason is if we become addicted to these distracting behaviors, well, let me tell you, there's one behavior that's a heck of a lot more efficient at distracting us than others, and that's certainly the sexual distraction. So yeah. Maybe I'm stressed out and I go to Twitter and just do that. Maybe I'm stressed out and I binge on Netflix for an hour. Maybe I'm stressed out and I drink too much. But, you know, the one thing that really does sort of pull me out of that monotony, the seeming monotony of daily life is sexual sin. And that might be another reason that pornography does do that for us. You know, mm-hmm. I think it's important that we recognize porn gives us something. Like, it feels good.
Yeah.
We feel powerful. We feel strong. We feel wanted, desired. You know, it feels great. It reminds me of an alcoholic who said, "I was only able to find freedom when I finally admitted I loved getting drunk." And I love the honesty in that. And I think, you know, sometimes that might be helpful too when it comes to sexual stuff.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
absolutely.
Great insight. We got to go to our last break. You're listening to The Catholic Man Show, Adam Minahan and David Niles. We're on the Lord's team,
the winning side.
So raise your glass. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're joined today by our distinguished guest, Mr. Matt Fred. Thanks for being here.
Hey guys, it's so great to be with y'all.
Dave, I gotta say that. Well, let's let Matt. Was that good?
It was a good impression try. Of an American doing an Australian accent.
Good. That's exactly what I was going for.
So we're here with Matt Fred. We're talking about his book, The Porn Myth. Matt, I'm just going to jump right back into it because there's a million other questions. We only have less than 12 minutes to go. So,
All right. I'll try and be concise.
The guy who's struggling with porn right now, is it better for them to abstain from sexual relations with their wife, or does it help to have the sexual relations with their wife to combat their porn?
Yeah, the release.
The
so
release.
To speak.
I mean, I think most men realize this, that you can't cure a porn addiction with more sex, for the same reason that you can't cure a gambling addiction by giving someone a bag of cash. Does that, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. like, think about that. I mean, in one sense, that seems like logical. Oh, this guy is addicted to gambling. I'll give him like $1 million.
Right.
Yeah, well, that doesn't cure it because in a sense, the money isn't what he was after.
Right.
And in a sense, to be frank, I mean, to be blunt, the orgasm isn't just what the man's after. He, you know, he's become addicted to the thrill, the hunt, you know, multiple screens open, all that sort of stuff. And so, you know, In my opinion, to think that if I just had sex, that would somehow do away with the urge. One, it's not true, and I don't think so. And two, it's certainly not a healthy way to look at your wife as a sort of sexual outlet. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as should someone abstain, you know, I would strongly suggest, let's say there's a man listening to this right now, and this is something he's been battling for a while. I would strongly suggest three things. One would be therapy. So at our website, integrityrestored.com, you can find a sex addiction therapist, a certified sex addiction therapist in your area. You can go to our website, punch in your postal code, you'll find one. Second, I'd suggest, you know, an SA group. And thirdly, spiritual direction. These are three intense things, but we've found that when done, especially together, that they have they're really helpful for people. And, you know, working through some of this stuff with your counselor, you know, you might get different answers. I think it's always tempting to give blanket answers, but
right.
that isn't always the most helpful thing. I know of men who maybe after a sexual relapse, they might decide that they're going to have a sexual fast for a month or 2 months or 3 months. And certainly if someone's, you know, in a period where they're looking at pornography regularly, I think that might be a very wise thing to think about and to do. But certainly I think with the guidance of a counselor, that could be a good decision to make.
I'm so glad that you mentioned that about your website, because that's one thing I've wondered about is, you know, for the guy who struggled with this, tried and tried, you know, seems to just be met
yeah.
with failure over and over and over again. you know, how does he go about finding the next level of support? So go to, is it integrityrestored.com? Is that what you said?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's good to know. Another question I have for you, Matt, is when someone is maybe entering this arena, this battlefield, they realize this is something I got to get rid of. Is this something that they are going to be more successful at, you know, on their own with prayer? Or do you think it's helpful to bring your brothers into the battle with you? You know, to like say, hey, this is something I need you guys help with. What's the research say, if there is any?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, when something has been stressed so much, and you want to say something almost different to it or contrary to it, the temptation is to overstress the other side. So, yeah, using a Catholic analogy here, suppose, you know, you grow up in a community that thinks Catholics worship Mary, then you might spend a lot of time emphasizing she's just a woman, she's less than nothing compared to God who is, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to say something that might sound shocking, right? Okay. I think we've over-spiritualized this issue of recovery. You know, for many of us, we went to confession and all we hear was, you know, well, try praying harder. And I think that's actually not great advice. Now, right? Now, that can sound maybe a little scandalous to people, but hear me out. Grace builds upon nature. And I think if you don't understand the nature of addiction, what are you left with? Just grace-sounding words that we throw at people who nod sagely and remain unhelped. Let's use another analogy. Suppose you met someone exhibiting signs of clinical depression. You would certainly say, pray, right? Turn to our Lord. Let him be your refuge. Ask him to remind you of his love. He wants to support you. But you might also say, are you seeing somebody about this? You know, you might recognize this isn't my field of expertise here, but I know somebody who it is his field of expertise. So, we need to pray, but there's a heck of a lot of other things that we have to be doing as well. And look, there's people out there who go to adoration every day and are addicted to porn. And mm-hmm. so prayer is important, but then also certainly, as I say, counseling, you know, accountability with other men, educating oneself about the destructive nature of pornography, et cetera, is vitally important as well.
Yeah, I loved on Integrity Restored on your podcast. I listened to it not too long ago. Actually, it was an episode probably two or three months ago. But you were talking about these triggers, you know, the triggers that you have to be aware of, and you mm-hmm. have to prepare for your worst when you're at your best. So you have to be able to know, you know, okay, I know that my habit is if I'm stressed out, I'm going to be more tempted. Or if I go to this website that's, you know, a sports website, but oh, all of a sudden there's a, you know, woman who is in a bikini, you know, all of a sudden, and that's a trigger. So you have to know what the triggers are to be able to combat it. What are your thoughts?
Spot on. Yeah. There's emotional sort of, there's emotional states that make us more vulnerable to triggers. And so what might be an emotional state? Well, it might be something like being tired or even, you know, we've drunk too much. All right. I know that's one of my things. Like if I drink too much, I start making really bad decisions. And so I got to be, and when I say too much, I don't mean that I'm drunk, you understand, but just maybe two or three, you know. But it might be that we're tired, stressed out. Okay. These things make us more vulnerable to triggers. And what might those triggers be? Well, it might be something like being rejected by my wife. All right. And then we start believing this lie. Well, if I just turn to porn, that'll help both of us out, you know.
Yeah.
Or it might be, you know, whatever. In the very first episode of the Integrity Restored podcast, I go through this in great detail. I don't mean for this to be a shameless plug, but people should really go listen to that podcast because, I mean, there's right now 50 episodes where we really get in depth in all of this. But certainly being aware of one's triggers is very important. Sometimes that's not as easy as it sounds, and so a good therapist can help us get to the root of it. Let me just give you one example, right? Mm-hmm. I read of a man in his 30s who was totally addicted to porn, and he didn't really know why. And when he was a boy, his father would hit his mother. And the only way his mother could keep him in his room and not have him come out and get in the middle of the fight was by throwing her husband's Playboys and penthouses into her son's room. God bless her, right? Doing the best she could. Now, is it any wonder as a 30-year-old when life is completely out of control and chaotic, is it any wonder that he finds himself on a train he feels he cannot get off, hurtling towards pornography? You know, but some of these things aren't that obvious, you know, and so that's, again, not to sound like a broken record here, but that's where a good therapist can be of use.
Man, that's a tough story.
Yeah, that is a tough story. So there's probably a lot of men right now that are listening who are kind of feel they're discouraged. They're falling maybe into despair because they're great, you know, practicing Catholics that are Christians who are trying their best, you know, and they keep falling. So obviously confession is a big one. You know, keep going, keep asking for mercy. Because God never gets tired of asking or of giving his mercy. What else?
Look, I maybe shouldn't have mentioned this so early in the show, but I really want to say it again. Therapy, essay, and spiritual direction.
Yep.
Because I could mention the other things, and everyone's heard them before. Like, here's some things you obviously have to be doing. You obviously need accountability software like Covenant Eyes and filtering. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then you should seriously question whether you're even serious about recovery. You need to have somebody in your life that you're accountable to. If you're not, you should seriously question your desire for sobriety. Not having these two things is like saying, I'm going to run a marathon, but I don't want to work out and I don't want to buy sneakers. You're like, just say you don't want to bloody run a marathon. Like, you should remember that you're welcome to look at porn if you want. Go for it. Your whole life, you feel free. Waste your entire little life looking at porn, and you're welcome to. No one's stopping you. And you'll soon see, of course, how narrow and uninteresting your life will become and eventually how wide the gates of hell are. Yeah. But that's an option. That's an option for you. But if you don't want that, then it's time to get really serious about this. Treat it like cancer. What wouldn't you do to destroy it? And if you're really not doing everything, you know, if you're saying to yourself, well, I'd get Covenant Eyes, but sometimes it slows down my computer, or sometimes it blocks the websites I don't want, and that's a pain in the butt. Yeah, but you need to choose which pain in the butt you want. Right. You know, I'm not pretending there's an easy option out here. There's no silver bullet. Freedom is one day at a time. Freedom is won by the choices we make one minute at a time. It's not a destination that we run through and we're like, yeah, this is it. I've reached it. All of us here are struggling, but where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more.
Matt Brad, thank you so much for being here with us.
Go pick up the Porn Men, Ignatius Press.
We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. Cheers to Jesus. Amen.